standing by. Over.
Jeremy and Joe starts now.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
No, no, no. No, Jeremy, no, George. The Lord is with you today. You get a break. Not me being the Lord. The Lord blessing you that they are.
I was starting off with a very...
That came off a bit much.
A bit much. That was a bit strong, Will.
Yeah, like, the Lord is with you on your radio today and your dial. Will Kunkel filling in. Okay? Maybe tone it down a little bit. It's 3 o'clock. We've got 3 hours of this. Joe and George not here. I believe...
Joe's out of state. Well, actually, both are out of state because Branham's in... Branham's with the conference tournament. Big 12.
Yeah. They play tomorrow?
Play tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah, they play BYU tonight. So they got the Bansa. That'll be fun.
They're going to beat that.
Well, I mean, you would hope so. BYU obviously lost Saunders for the year. So, I mean, the Bansa could still take over a game, though.
That matchup is always so good for Houston. I remember being there last year covering them. Just because BYU plays so along the perimeter, and you take away that three ball, like, forget about it.
Right.
I know Bansa's got a little bit more to his game than they've had some guys in the past. But... UH is better than BYU, but UH has flaws, which we can talk about later in the show. But let's talk about the flaws of your Houston Rockets, because it's an interesting conversation. I don't know how y'all feel. What's the text line number, Brian? I don't have my notebook.
Oh, it's 713s. I used to have it memorized. It's the same number as our call-in. Hold on. We'll get it here in a second.
We'll call it.
It's 713-780-3776. There we go.
It's still the HRMP, right?
Yeah, HRMP list are on 713-780-3776.
So call in, text in, because this is like a really sucky situation for the Rockets and their fans right now. And I say that because they're not a bad team. They don't suck. Like, they're not a bad basketball team. They're probably top five, maybe top six team in the NBA, whatever it is, when it actually comes down to their schedule or their record. They have 25 losses, which is their third in the West. And if you look at the NBA and bringing in the East, they're just tied with the Knicks. So they're like 5-6 best team in the NBA. The problem is they're not a bad team, but they're a severely flawed team. And this is a team that it's trying to win. When you're a top 5-6 team in any league, you're trying to win a championship. You're trying to win the whole thing. But the gap between them and the first team in the NBA, whether that be the Thunder.
Oh, it's the Thunder.
Yeah, okay. So them being the Thunder. Do you think it's clear cut? Like, do you think
I do, but I would say even if you look outside the Thunder, because we thought that there was a big gap between the Thunder and everyone else in the West going into the season. Mm-hmm. I don't think what we anticipated was there was also a large gap from number two, that being the Spurs, to everyone after that.
Exactly.
So now you're dealing with two monsters instead of just one.
And that's what just is such a bummer is that, and I think that if Fred's healthy, of course, and Steven Adams is healthy, of course, they're a better team. They're still not on that level. Like, these guys, it's a different tier. So, you know, we do this in the NFL all the time of tiers. Okay, here are your Super Bowl contenders. Here are the guys that are going to win your divisions. Here's a team that can get into the division, the wild card, then into divisional round. Okay, and now let's really start narrowing this thing down. And that's what you do when you have a championship contending team. When you're the Texans 5 years ago, you don't give a damn like kind of where you rank in the NFL. You give a damn where you rank at the end of the season in regards to draft position, and are you going to get the first, second, or third pick. Now you're looking at it, okay, I don't really care. Last year was a little different because the Jaguars actually won the AFC South. But the way you look at it would be, okay, win your division, check. Are we hosting a home game? And then who are the possible matchups there? Because you really get into the nitty-gritty of the matchups. And every play, every inch, all that matters, because at the very top, that's what it's like. And so we came into the season with the Rockets the same way. Like, okay, they'll be in the playoffs. Done. Check. Check the box. They were a 2 seed last year, and then we thought that they made some improvements in the offseason to actually really compete for a championship. Like, we don't think they're going to be in the play-in game. We don't think they're going to be fighting for, you know, a playoff spot. We know they're going to be in the dance. But the gap of, like, us competing, like, is it – and the NBA is a weird sport like that where you put up with the regular season just to get to the postseason, And even now, you're kind of looking at the postseason, like, what's the point of the first round? Like, the first round is going to be blowouts and bad basketball, and who really has a chance? The Clippers are going to make a run. The Timberwolves and the Suns really going to be there in the end? Or the Hawks really? Like, no. Let's see what they do, blah, blah, blah. Let's parse it down between the Thunder, the Spurs, maybe the Nuggets because they have the best player in the NBA. Like, the Nuggets are behind the Rockets. We think the Nuggets are significantly better, as we learned last night.
Well, certainly when they're at home, when the Rockets are coming off a back-to-back.
Aaron Gordon didn't even play, though, right?
No, Gordon was in the game.
Did he?
But they didn't. I mean, hell, I mean, Jokic didn't even have a great offensive, like, at least in the first half. I think he was held to 6 points in the first half, but he still had, like, 5 steals, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, something like that. Like, he was flirting with a triple-double on rebounds, assists, and steals with barely even scoring. And then, obviously, second half, no one could miss a shot on the Nuggets, especially Brown.
But the point, like, that I'm hammering here is the fact that these guys are separated by half a game. Like, baloney, though, right? Sure, the Rockets are a half a game ahead of the Nuggets. No one actually believes that the Rockets are a better team than
Nuggets. No, I would be, if the Nuggets were to face the Rockets in a 7-game series, which I think was the matchup before the game. Like, if the playoffs had started last night before last night's game, I think that was the matchup. I don't know if the Nuggets moved up. But yeah, I'd pick Nuggets in 6.
Yeah, gentlemen.
Even if the Rockets had home court, I'd pick Nuggets in 6.
I 100% agree. And it's because this team, as I said off the top, is that the Rockets are just so flawed. Yes, they have arguably the best player in the world. I mean, I know he's not, but Kevin Durant is the best player on the court at a lot of times, and he's been great for this team. I don't think anything that's going on with the Rockets right now is Kevin's fault. I don't think anybody points to that. Injuries are number one. No Fred, no Steven Adams. But the lack of development is alarming. Amen Thompson took a giant leap last year. I think we all agree from 2 years ago to last year, that's where he took his massive growth spurt. You know, you see these players from high school to college that grow 6 inches. That's what happened to Amen. He took a huge step. He really upped his game, and we were hoping that he was going to come into this season taking another jump. Now, it's not realistic to think that he's going to take that same leap that he did from last offseason into last year into this season, but it is reasonable to say, all right, I don't need you to get 200% better. Here's what I need you to do, though. And when you talk to players, you always ask them, where do you want to get better this offseason? Or when they come back from break, what did you work on this offseason? And they always say the same dumb line of, you know, everything. I worked on everything. I really wanted to improve my game in all facets. Like, oh, okay, that's great, and that's neat and all. But it's again, to draw parallels, the same conversation with the Nick Caserio and drafting. Like, we just want to take the best player available. Like, dude, no, you don't. No, you don't. You want to take the best lineman possible. Get to the spot where you can get the best lineman because you need to get better on the line. It's the same thing with Amen Thompson. I don't need you to get incremental. You're already a really, really, really good defender, and you're really good at getting to the rack. I don't need you to get now incrementally better at getting to the rack or incrementally better at playing defense because you're already really good. Like, if there's a scale 0 to 100, you're like a 90, just for argument's sakes. Now, where you could improve in the offseason dramatically is handling the ball, the ability to dribble, the ability to shoot, the three ball. Like, you can go from like a 55, 60 to like a 70 or 75. You can make a big jump there. It hasn't been there, though. So he's all, for all intents and purposes, he might be a better player than he was last year, but for all intents and purposes, he's the same guy.
Yeah, I would agree that it's not a massive difference. Now, I would, just for the sake of the conversation, he is at a career high for points per game. But yeah, to your point, like, he's still not able to run the point, which I think was probably always going to be the case. It's probably a little over-optimistic to think he was going to develop into a point. He's probably more of a small 4 or 3 going forward. But I think the big thing you'd like to see for him to develop, and you mentioned, is the shooting. Like, he does have a little bit of a baseline 3. He can hit that. And when he gets into the paint, he can hit down that jump shot. But anything top of the key, you know, 15 feet and out is pretty It's a wild ride. Yeah, it's very inconsistent. So I don't know if he ever gets there. Like, there have been guys that have made that. Like, Richard Jefferson pointed that out because he was on the broadcast last night. Like, he mentioned during the game that he and Amen had similar shooting motions and techniques earlier in their career. And then Richard Jefferson wasn't a great shooter early in his career, but it slowly developed to where he became a three-point shooter. I don't know how long that takes for Amen, but I won't completely dismiss it because he is still so young. But there's a lot of room to improve there to hit the ceiling that we hoped he had.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of the conversation, because I hate the conversation of like, oh, you're 3 years in, you're not like the greatest player ever. That's unfair. That's unrealistic. I just think that the inability to handle the ball at a competent level with too many guys on this roster, frankly, and that's what kind of magnifies other individuals, including Amen, is the inability of his ability to handle the ball and the inability to spot up and shoot, like to consistently knock down threes. And if you're not hitting threes in the NBA in 2026, you ain't going to win a whole bunch of games. The mathematical equation doesn't change. And if you're not hitting threes, then okay, but you better rebound the best, and you better box out the best, and you better run the best. You better be the best at other things, which they were at a point. But then when they lost Steven Adams and then lost Fred VanVleet, like that went out the window. So now they're no longer the best at areas to help make up where they really struggle. And again, the math equation doesn't change. You got to hit threes in the NBA. And that's another conversation for another day, because it's kind of what makes the NBA a struggle to watch. But he's shooting 21% from three.
Yeah, like his only
21%.
His only viable 3-point shot is from the corner. He can hit that a decent amount. I'd be interested. I could find it during a break.
That's not a guard.
Yeah, no. I think he's a four.
And I had this conversation with somebody a year ago. I said, listen, he's a point guard in this team. He's like, no, he's not. I was like, dude, he is. That's how they used him last year at points. Like, he kind of played everything last year. And now this year he's having to play the one more. He's out a little bit out of position. He's got this skill set to where he can play downhill, get to the rack like you would like to see from a one, but he's not a one.
No.
Fred is a one. And in particular, with this team. That's the thing. Not everyone is created the same. Not everyone plays the same way. They all play a little different based on the team that they have. On this team, a one doesn't need to play downhill. A one doesn't need to get to the rack if you have Fred. And the way it's built is that you have Fred. And Amen, when he's handling the ball, they're not good. When Kevin handles the ball, they're not good. And those are their two premier ball handlers outside of Reed Sheppard. And Reed's getting minutes now more, which is good. He's getting starter minutes, not starting. I don't understand all that.
I mean, I'm fine with that. All that matters is the minutes count.
I just don't get it. Like, yeah. I'm just trying to wrap my head. I'm not saying
I think there's value in staggering your scoring, though. I think that's probably Udoka's approach there. It's like you want a bona fide scorer with that second group. Because right now, because of the injuries, like it's not a deep bench. Like, you don't have a lot of scorers off the bench. So having Reed with that second unit, I think, makes sense. But I mean, you hit on it. The biggest flaw of the Rockets have is the ability to handle the ball right now. The turnover numbers every single night are just atrocious. Like last night, a man had that dunk that put him up 43-42, and then the Nuggets immediately went like on an 8-0 run and basically never looked back because the Rockets were, well, missing free throws. They started off one for six, Will. Deep into the third quarter, they were 1-for-6 from the free throw line. But they're missing free throws. Alpi Chief among those. He started 0-for-4 from the free throw line, but they're also just turning over the ball. In that 8-0 stretch from when they took the lead 43-42 to when the Nuggets went into the locker room with a big lead, in part because they hit a three late right before the end of the second quarter. But the Rockets kept turning the ball over and giving them run. Like, there were so many runouts the Nuggets got where guys were leaking out. There was turnovers, getting fast breaks. It was just a train wreck. On top of them not having – you could tell Durant didn't have his legs. Like, it was kind of a perfect storm last night.
It was, but it's a perfect storm, I guess, but it's also like the same result again against the good team. That's not always the story.
Yeah, that's not to make an excuse for them, because we've seen them do that on the first night of back-to-backs or just, you know, games on an island.
It's what happens when they play a good basketball team.
Yeah, I think they've shown us that there's a clear ceiling to who they can be this year as the roster currently stands. And that's, I think, dependent on matchup, good enough to get out of the first round. I think they can beat the Lakers in the first round. although that'll be a high-scoring series because no one plays defense. but outside of that, I don't think they beat Denver in the first round. They don't beat San Antonio in the first round. Certainly wouldn't beat OKC, although they won't see OKC in the first round. So there's a few matchups I think they could get by and get to a semifinal, but once they run up against Denver, San Antonio, or OKC, they're going to get clobbered.
I mean, I agree, and that's the sad part is that they're clearly a playoff team. They have Kevin Durant. The emotions were high coming into the season, and it's just we're gonna run this. We know that this car is gonna run out of gas before I get home, type of deal. I know I'm gonna go as far as I can, and eventually it's gonna putter out, and that's what sucks about this team right now. Do you think that I can't play revisionist history, but when Fred got hurt, what moves were on the table because for them to not have a competent point guard in house right now to run this show is crazy.
Yeah, it's weird because Fred got hurt in September. Mm-hmm. So obviously a lot of the free agency moves were already done. Some of the things they could have done were off the table.
I know
for them
financially they were limited too.
Yeah, and the other part of that is there's that rule in the NBA where players who change teams can't be moved before, I think it's December 15th, something like that, sometime in December. So they couldn't do something before the season started. They had to get into the season. And I think they just got off to a good enough start that they're willing to not move assets. But then you obviously throw the Steven Adams injury on top of that. And I don't know. I felt there was definitely some veteran names in the trade deadline I thought they should have gone for. I don't blame them for not going in on a point guard before the regular season. Like I said, the Fred injury happened late and you couldn't make a move for anyone that changed teams before mid-December. So they're kind of handcuffed there. But there were so many point guards that were had around the league and moved for second-round picks. I thought Rafael Stone should have been in on that. But let's be honest. You mentioned we know we're going to run out of gas at some point. Rafael Stone said that. You remember his comments right before the trade deadline? He kind of I wish I remember the exact phrasing he used, but he admitted in one of those press conferences right after the trade deadline when asked why they didn't make a lot of moves, he basically said, "We don't think we can win a title this year."
Yeah, he said maybe this is not our year.
That was the phrase. He said realizing this is not our year.
But he was referring specifically, to be fair, with the injuries and maybe it's not our year to get the injuries kind of going our way. He wasn't speaking specifically to winning. I think there was obviously a strong correlation.
I thought he was. I'll try to find the quote during the break. Okay. But I thought he actually was talking about winning and losing and why he didn't make a move. To an extent, I get it, because fans and a lot of media, and I'm sure people around the league are going to look at your roster dude, you got 37-year-old Durant. You got to go for it now. But I think it's realistic to look at this team and think, let's add one of those point guards that went for a second-round pick. Are you better than OKC with that guy? Are you better than Spurs with that guy? If the answer is no, and I think it was, then it's kind of more prudent to wait a year and go for it next year.
Now, are you still playing the developmental game? At what point does the developmental game
with Reed? I think with Reed, you are.
Reed, yes. I'm on board with that.
I don't think I would make that comment for anyone else. Now, I think Amen and Alpi can develop more because they are 23, whatever years old. But
we got to have an Alpi conversation.
I would move
Bro,
Alpi.
I have had.
Spoiler alert.
Dude, I don't know that I really came out strong with it, to be fair. So I'm not going to say, I've been saying this for a while.
Well, you can. Don't tell anybody that.
Fair. Dude, I've been saying this for years. When he was playing in Turkey, when I was watching highlights of him on YouTube in the Turkish league.
No one does more deep dives on Turkish basketball than Will Kunkel.
The Lord is here.
The Lord is here, yes.
But, bro, he is not good enough to be – I don't think he's good enough to be your second best player in a championship team. I think in this league in particular – if you're your second best player, you got to be very, very good defensively inside, or you at least have to be a guard. You got to be able to shoot the three, which he doesn't do. He's an absolute liability.
I hate it when he shoots the three.
Defensively.
He's so bad from three.
Yeah, he can't shoot the three. He's a liability defensively, and offensively, he has the potential to be very good on given nights. But when he loses it, dude, he looks like Bambi. It looks like he can't walk. He doesn't have a clue.
Yeah.
It's awkward as hell. So it's the dude that's overage, but clearly had touch when he played. Like, he's like 55, 60 at the YMCA now.
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, bro's got touch, but like kind of old. Like, you know, can't really move the same way. When Alpi's off, that's what it looks like. It's like, dude, just back of the rim every time, in and out every time. And then you're kind of like, is it his fault? Is it just bad luck? Or is the touch really an issue at times? And it is.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, when you have the conversation with Alpi, there's always going to be the other side that points to his numbers, right? Like, there's so.
But it's the NBA.
I know. Look, I'm not trying to make that argument. I'm just kind of playing out, like, the conversation. Like, there's so many people that will point to, is like, well, how many players in the league average, you know, 25-7 or whatever his current season average is? And there's obviously very few players, but I think it's just a feel thing with him. Like, you can't look at the box score and get the full impression of Alpi Şengün. You like
1,000%.
You have to watch the game and just get a feel for who this guy is. And like, it's the complaining to the referees after the most obvious fouls.
What is with the Europeans doing that?
Jacking
now?
Up threes when he has no business to, bricking free throws, and sometimes
just
like
playing Ole defense.
The defense is like.
It's not physical.
To a point where it's almost like not even worth mentioning. It's just so bad. But like, I think the thing that frustrates me the most is kind of what you mentioned. Like, you know, I think you called him Bambi at one point. Like, he has to be the least athletic looking, or like the fluidity of his movement is so unathletic for a great NBA. Like, he's a great two-time All-Star NBA player, yet at times he looks like the most unathletic guy on the court. And it's like sometimes when he gets into his post moves, if he can bully a guy and get on the basket, he does really well. But whenever he starts his post up from kind of deep out and tries to do – hell, he got called for a five-second penalty yesterday. I haven't seen that penalty called since Barkley. And Alpi got called for a five-second yesterday. Like, he looks so unathletic at times when he's trying to post people from, like, deep out. But if he gets them in the paint, then, you know, he's usually pretty efficient, although sometimes he leaves those bunnies a little.
Sometimes.
And he does leave the bunnies short a little time or clank them off the back of the rim.
To my point again, to what you were just saying, the frustrating part is there's times where the footwork is like, damn, like that's unbelievably efficient, proper footwork. And then it's like, bro, did you forget how to walk?
And then the next time down the court, he trips over his own feet.
And it's
so weird.
He's like a baseball player in the regards to the stretches are long. Like, he has hot stretches. He's got cold stretches. And they all kind of seem to last. And you're like, bro, this is basketball. You're not a shooter. Why are you having cold stretches in the paint? Why is that happening? And Alpi is a guy that you need to watch every game of every season to understand what you're getting. I don't need to watch prime LeBron James to understand that he was a good player and what he did. We got it. Good. Alperen Şengün is a guy you got to watch what he brings, what he doesn't bring in particular, because like you said, the numbers are there. However, if you're going to be the second best player on a championship-winning team, this is what he's done in March. Last night he dropped 10. The game before that, 14. 16 before that, 28, 17, 32. Way too much inconsistency. The month before that, he had a game against Miami with 13. At Orlando, 16. Turned it on for Sacramento, 26. And then before that, 16, 16, 13. It's non-existent at times. And you need to be the best players in the world, and whatever their sport aren't the guy. Like, any player in the NBA can drop 38 on a night. Shoot. Bam Adebayo can drop 84, apparently, on a given night. Any player can drop 38. Not every player can average 24, 25, 26. And there's a big gap between 24 and 20, by the way, which is where Alpi is. Averaging 20, it's not that impressive in this league where you're scoring a whole bunch of points.
Yeah, especially the way
trying to be number
now.
Two. Not if you're trying to be what's Robin to Batman, at least.
Yeah, I think that's – I struggle with that one, if he can be the Robin. I certainly am 100% out on him ever being the Batman. Yeah.
He can't be the Robin because there's zero defense.
Like, yeah.
Who's a great Robin? I mean, obviously, Jaylen Brown, elite on both ends, very good basketball
Jaylen
player,
Jaylen Williams
right?
for the Thunder.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he. I mean, I was.
What you have to do, you have to be a really good basketball player. And Alpi's not a really good round basketball. You've got to be elite at something if your game falls off elsewhere, or you got to be a really good, well-rounded basketball player. It's just like James Harden's a really bad defender. but he's pretty damn good at scoring the ball. Same thing with Carmelo.
Yeah, so you're saying like his superpower isn't enough to
right.
make up for his weaknesses. It's like, kind of to make it like a baseball term, you've heard this like 5-tool
mm-hmm,
player.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Alpi has two tools that he's like really good at.
Yeah, and the rest.
Maybe half of another, yeah. but he's not a 5-tool player.
Hell
like
no.
Like the defense, the shooting from anything outside of like, you know, 15
ball
feet,
handling,
ball handling.
Have.
Yeah. Like the footwork, like footwork's kind of the half because there's times like when he's in the paint, his footwork
and
looks
then
great,
tool,
and then other times that he's tripping over his own feet.
To your point, sorry, got anxious there.
No, all good.
The consistency isn't there, and
yeah,
I think
sure.
the number one thing outside of obvious talent, the ability to do something, is to be able to do it often and to do it often well. And he doesn't do that. That's my biggest knock on him, and to disappear defensively. To a point where now Kevin Durant seems to have issues with teammates in private in general. But, like, I'm sure we've talked about this a lot here on ESPN. Did he say anything wrong?
Well, maybe the thing about Jabari was uncalled for.
Jabari sucks in the corner at times.
Yeah, I mean, Jabari he had a good first quarter last night. Then he stopped,
okay,
he stopped getting the ball. For some reason, Jabari in the first quarter was like four for five, like, and the rest of the team was like 5 for 17. And then he just didn't get the ball for like two quarters, so I don't know.
But that's, you know, like I know in arguments, when not that we're having this argument now, but like, I know in arguments when someone tries to pin – if I say Jabari Smith Jr. is just not a good enough basketball player to be the third or fourth best player on this team, they say, oh, yeah, what about the first quarter last night? It's like, prove my point. If you have to pinpoint something so narrowly, you've made my point.
No, I'm with you
on that.
You know
what I'm saying? Because like, for Durant,
point.
It's not like, oh, what about the first quarter? It's more like, oh, what about his first 17 years, his first 35 years? What about every game
oh, man,
that he's
don't
doing?
Put 35 years on Durant. That's not cool.
Shoot.
He's only 37.
He's been in the league for like half my life.
He's been in the league so long, there's pictures of him in a Sonics jersey.
Yeah, he's in Hall of Fames on teams that he's played in already in the NBA.
I think there's only two players in the league still that play for the Sonics, him and Jeff Green, both Rockets.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah, I think so. There could be there might be one or two others.
No longer.
No, Dale Shrimp no longer. Gary Payton.
Damn.
Yeah, he's not in the league.
Sam Perkins is no longer out there popping corner threes.
No, Sean Kemp not in the league. No.
But that's my point. Jabari Smith Jr., there's always the, yeah, what about when he played well here? You can't be, yeah, what about when I played well? It's like Jalen Green. Yeah, but what about that second game? Okay, what about the other six, dude?
That'd be a really tough argument to make.
And
for
here's
Jalen
the crazy
Green.
Part: Jalen Green's probably better than both those guys. Maybe not Alpi.
Yeah,
he's definitely better than Jabari.
Oh, he's not better than Alpi.
That's what I mean. Maybe not.
Okay,
Alpi.
Okay.
But at least I will say this: you can certainly have conversations on given nights at who's better.
Sure, like Jalen is Jalen, and he was capable of this when he was still in Houston too. He could explode like he did in that game two. I think it was like 38 points in that game two against the Warriors, but then every other game was like 9 points, 8 points, 10 points.
You can't disappear as a star.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't just disappear. And Alpi, to his credit, at least puts the ball up from a shot. Like, he'll take
the
shots,
true.
Right?
He has no – yeah.
Jalen wasn't even taking shots in that Warriors series, and that was the most
Alpi
frustrating
Alpi believes
part.
In the you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Yeah,
Wayne Gretzky. He fully believes in that. Like, my frustration with Alpi, not only – what we've talked about so far, but like there are times when he gets positioned in the paint, like I feel like he's a pretty efficient player, although he does have random nights where he just can't hit anything. But like if he has to like bully a guy, if he's not able to get, you know, deep post position, he has to try to bully and back a guy in like he's tried to do in the past against Draymond, like he's not strong enough to back those guys in. But the problem is when he gets the ball in that spot, for some reason, he's never realized that. Like, okay, I'm too far out. Let me pass the ball off. You know, move to the other side of the paint. Reestablish, get better position, get the ball back. Right? He never does that. He'll get the ball, hold on to it, then try to back down.
He'll try to Chris Berman.
Yeah, like he runs off 13 seconds of the shot clock before he like finally gives up on it, or he puts up like a really, you know, off balance, awkward looking shot. So I wish there'd just be more like realization on his part where if I'm not deep in the post, I need to find a way to, you know, make a different play, reestablish, and then get the ball back instead of trying to force it.
What's his weight, do you think?
Albie, like 230?
243 he's listed on Wikipedia, which is obviously always correct.
Oh, of course.
243 on ESPN.
100% correct.
Okay, so he's listed at 243. It's 6'11". I'll never forget, and I think this is very soon after this, they went and got Steven Adams. When they played the Pelicans 2 years ago, Jonas Valanciunas, who's 6'11", 265, ate that dude's lunch. He made Alpi look like a little sissy. I mean, he bodied him every single time. Valanciunas isn't, and the point of me saying this is Valanciunas isn't like something great. It's not like going up against Shaq or David Robinson Tim Duncan or some big beast that's awesome. Like, all right, good luck. Like, bro, this dude ate him up every single time. That happens to you. That's why he looked pretty decent at times, again, at times, against the Warriors, because there was no one there to stop him. The mismatch down low was in Alpi's favor.
He can't back down Draymond. Like, that was my frustration.
He did at times, though.
Yeah, like, my frustration in that Warriors series with Alpi, like, when Alpi was on the move, when they were running some sort of action that got him on the move to where Draymond couldn't plant his feet and basically shove him back when Alpi would try to back him down, it was great. Like, if he got Draymond on the move, didn't let Draymond, you know, set his feet, he could get to the basket and get up a pretty good shot. But if he was stationary and Draymond had a chance to plant his feet, or anyone else that's Draymond's size or similar or even bigger, like, he doesn't back him down. Like, we see Spurs game, they got blown out, but he can back Wimby down because Wimby's a beanpole. But anyone that's stout, like Al Horford, he couldn't back down Al Horford the other night.
Yes. When he does do it, it's inconsistent. Like, here's the problem with the NBA, and here's the problem with the Rockets. You need to be 80% on those attempts, because the math, they're going down the other way hitting threes. So you need to be you can't be shooting a three-pointer's percentage from inside the paint. Like, you got to be a lot more efficient than Alpi is, because it's going to take him, all right, backs him down seven times. You got to be nailed 6 out of 7 times. You got to be nailed 7 out of 10 times. Versus,
did you do that intentionally?
Oh, geez, hell no, I did not.
I didn't take you for a 6'7" guy, but that's, you dropped
funny.
One on us.
That's funny. But he's not consistent enough, and that's again the problem. If you're going to play that style of game, you got to be elite at it. You don't have to be an elite like 6'7" 3-point guy, but you know. 40% gets the job done, obviously.
Yeah, 40% gets you the Hall of Fame.
Right? So even 35%. So you have a lot more opportunities to fail, but also make up for it with the three ball, whereas in the two-point shot, you need to consistently have to back down a guy, think about if you're playing one-on-one with someone and you consistently back down a guy, you're like, oh, I'm dominating you, and you hit 3 or 4 shots. That's 6 points. They now hit 2 threes. Like, just that's the problem with the NBA and the math, is that the threes just outweigh the twos. It's a bad game from that standpoint. And that's why too many teams shoot too many threes, and it's an unwatchable product from that viewpoint.
But to that point, though, the Rockets aren't built to play that math.
Bingo.
They're not
that's
built
my
to play
point,
that math.
Is that you're relying on a guy that's inefficient at an inefficient way of playing the game. So if you're going to play inefficiently inside the paint, okay. But you've got to be really efficient at doing it. He's inefficient at playing the game inefficiently. We got to take a break. Okay. I got to take a breath.
Deep breath?
Yeah. It's just like.
You feel better? You got a lot off your chest there. You declared yourself God at the beginning of the segment.
Yeah, I did that. Woo.
You hit us with a 6'7". It was an eventful segment one.
All right. So we're 33 minutes into the show, and a lot's happened. If you guys got thoughts, someone called in, but we didn't get to it because we were screaming and yelling. 713. Did I write 780 here?
Yeah, 780-3776.
713-780-3776. Call or text in the HRNP listen line, hotline. We'll talk more about the Rockets. We got to get to the Texans as well as the Astros. And, I mean, do we have the huevos to talk about this hilarious Lena Hidalgo deal? Have you been following this?
I have not, no.
Yo, it's so funny.
You'll have to fill me in.
She called herself the landlord of something. Really funny. We'll talk about it at some point in the show. We'll be back in a minute here on ESPN Radio.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Jeremy Branham and Joe George.
Hey, hockey day in Houston is March 21st. So so you all know, today is March 12th. But Hockey Day in Houston is March 21st at St. Arnold Brewing. But the night before, for those of you not mathing, that's March 20th. That is the second annual Houston Hockey Hall of Fame Banquet. That being at Arnold St. Arnold Brewing, all right? So March 20th, St. Arnold Brewing is the Hall of Fame Hockey Banquet. We have two tickets to send you to the event. Tickets include a la carte dining, whiskey, and tequila, and the opportunity to meet and greet local legends. We got two tickets to caller number two right now, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. So, March 20th, Houston Hockey Hall of Fame, St. Arnold Brewing, food, drink, boom. Second caller gets those tickets. Will Kunkel filling in for Joe George and Jeremy Branham. Joe is nude sunbathing somewhere. Jeremy is at the Big 12 tournament. Cougars play basketball tonight. We just had a riveting conversation about the Rockets and their weaknesses and their lack of growth and their problems. I think we could let's talk a little bit about the Cougs since they do play tonight. The Cougs take on BYU this evening in the Big 12 tournament. They got that, I believe, is it a double bye? But they get that bye, so I think they handily take care of BYU. It's always a nightmare matchup for BYU just because the way they play on the perimeter. They pass the ball around. UH does a really, really good job defensively, scrambling and covering those passing lanes and covering up the ground so that you can't get shots out. Now, of course, they got the young freshman that is extremely talented. Probably should have won the Big 12 Player of the Year, but didn't. AJ, the Bounsta, but he does a couple more things than most players than BYU's history hasn't done. BYU's an underdog, 9.5-point favorite, so Cougs are favored. I think they get the win, but the Cougs are also a flawed team. They're just a little different this year than last. They're missing LJ Cryer's ability to create shots on the perimeter, and they're also missing Juwan Roberts, his ability to anchor the defense inside. Plus his ability to, hey, we need a bucket. We've been on a dry spell here from 4 to 5 minutes. Just give it to Juwan, and he'll go lefty hook shot. Bingo, bango, bongo, no problem. And JoJo Tugler suffered. He came into the season injured, so he was a little out of shape coming in to play, and you cannot play out of shape in Kelvin Sampson's program. He was out of shape, had to play his way in shape, has played better, but is consistently in foul trouble, so no Juwan. And if JoJo's ever hurt, ever in foul trouble, he's then not on the court. So they're still a good team, but kind of a lot like the Rockets. There's that tier that's Duke, Michigan, Florida, Arizona, doing this off the top of my head, are like the top of the tier. And then there's a gap there in between, and then there's Houston. So Houston is in the conversation.
Put them with like UConn. Did you mention UConn and Florida?
No, I mentioned Florida. I think Florida might be a little above them.
Yeah,
I think.
That's fair.
So I think the top three teams in the country by far going into the tournament, I mean, it's going to end up this way, Duke, Michigan, Florida.
Yeah, or Arizona. I wanted to. Yeah.
I think Arizona's definitely there. I think they just have some. They have some lower spots than those other guys. Play really well.
That's fair.
The competition they play.
I mean, I think there's like a list of 8-9 teams that can win it all, and the Cougs are part of it. Just like part of what you mentioned, like the Cougs have. I know Jeremy will point to like their overall team offensive efficiency numbers to like rebut what I'm about to say, but like they're a good offensive team. They just more than other good offensive teams in the top 10 in the nation. They just have the tendency to once or twice a game go through long stretches of not scoring. It's not like, oh, well, they went without a field goal for 2 minutes. It's like, every few games you look up and, oh, the Cougars went 5 minutes without scoring a bucket.
And they did that last year. However, last year, y'all weren't scoring either. Like, the other team wasn't going to get a sniff. So, if you went through a drought, you kind of went through a drought for 5 minutes together versus – their defense now is not the elite defense. I'm not saying it's not good. Like they have,
I think it still ranks pretty high. But I know what you mean. It's kind of a feel thing.
Exactly. It's the same thing with the Rockets. Okay, they're the fifth. Like if you don't watch the Rockets every night, you're like, they have the fifth best record. They're better than the Nuggets. They're right there with who's right behind them, the Lakers. Like they're not close to the Nuggets, and yet they are better than the Nuggets when it looks to the record, right? Like that doesn't. I don't care. I watched the Cougs night in and night out last year and this year. They are not nearly as dominant defensively as they have in the past. Now, I understand what the metrics say. I understand they're still good. I'm not saying they're bad. But the gap between the offense and the defense is bigger than it was last year. So when you're going on these offensive droughts, you're not also guaranteed like you were last year that the opponent is going through a drought.
Yeah, like to back up what you're saying, like I think the Cougars' defense is still elite when teams – frankly, dumbly try to run like pick and roll top of the key on them. Like, yeah. No one shuts down a pick and roll offense, you know, better than the Cougars defense. I still think that's true. But what we saw kind of exposed in the game against Iowa State that started that 3-game losing streak was teams that really have a lot of movement, kind of like the Warriors, like an offense that resembles the way the Warriors run around, run off screens, and just have a lot of movement. The Cougs, I mean, not to discredit them, because I think a lot of defenses will struggle against really efficient offenses with a lot of movement, but like the Cougs defense can be beaten when they face an offense like that that's constantly moving, coming off the back screens and getting those wide open shots like Iowa State did to them.
Yeah, or yeah, what Kansas did to them had them in fits. Just to kind of back up my opinion, or like kind of what my eye test is with some metrics. I love Evan Miyakawa. I had him on my show, by the way, Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. The dude's metric site, Evan Mia, Evan and then MIYA.com, is amazing. I love it. And so Michigan, according to his metrics, has the best offense in the country and the second best defense. Duke has the second best offense and the best defense. So, like, obviously 1-2-1-2, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games. So if one doesn't show up, the other one will likely be there. Arizona has the sixth best offense, but the third best defense. Florida, fifth best offense, fourth best defense. All those very highly ranked, very tightly. Houston is his fifth ranked team, according to the metrics, in the nation. They have the 13th ranked offense and fifth ranked defense. So that gap is larger than any gap by a wide margin.
Right.
If you get into like the millimeters and the very fine tuned details when you get to the top, you know, like that gap is great. If you go down to like the top 25, of course, like a team like, I don't know, Nebraska, the 46th best offense, the sixth best defense, that gap is astronomical. That's not, I'm looking at the very, very tippy top of Everest here. That gap is just, it's too large.
Yeah. And I feel like what's going to, unfortunately, keep the Cougars from winning a title this year is not that they don't have good offensive players. It's not that they can't be really efficient or catch fire at times. It just feels like they're kind of, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this, but they're I think against good defensive teams, they're easily defensed, right? Because they have basically one.
They're not a hard guard.
Yeah, well, because they have like one guy who can beat you off the dribble and get to the basket with Kingston Fleming. So they have like two guys that can beat you from three on a consistent basis. Like, I know McCarty just had a 6-3 night.
That's not him, though.
But that's not him on every night
and
basis.
And he's certainly not going to get those ops.
Yeah.
Like, Kelvin was not, those ops aren't coming in the postseason.
Right, because like on our every game basis, it's basically, you know, it's sharp and it's Uzan from three. So you have one guy that's going to beat you off the dribble. We got two guys that are consistently shooting the three. And then without Juwan Roberts, like, I know Tugler had a good offensive night in his the season or the regular season finale, but on a night-in, night-out basis, like, he's not a consistent post player. You really don't have a consistent post player. Like, your other big getting the most minutes is Sanak, but he's not really a post player. He's more of a like a spot-up baseline shooter, occasionally threes. But he's slowed down in the amount that he's attempting from beyond the arc. So I just think they're kind of easy to defend because, you know, okay, well, Kingston's the guy that's going to drive to the basket. Uzan and Sharp are the guy that are going to try to beat us from three, and they don't really have a post game. So I feel like against really good elite defenses, the Cougars will unfortunately continue to have those dry spells on the offensive end.
The best players and the best teams in any sport across the board do what they do so well that you know they're going to do it, and they still do it really well. For instance, the best running teams in the NFL, you know they're going to line up, they're going to run it down their throat, your throat, and they're going to beat you that way, and you can't stop them because they're just better at moving your body than you are at stopping that. Juwan Roberts was that last year. You knew every time he touched that ball, dribble, dribble, lefty hook, boom, done. Like, you ain't stopping it. And he's not like some elite talent at the national level. Like, he's playing overseas now, right? I don't think.
Yeah, he's not in the NBA.
Right.
But I don't know where he's playing exactly.
So he's not some like crazy talent you just can't stop. However, he did have this ability and he had this dog in him that he wasn't being stopped. And he had this one move at the college level you weren't stopping. And they went to that when they needed it the most anytime, and it was unstoppable. They don't have that this year.
Yeah, I think that this year, although I don't like it as much as the Roberts post, I don't think it'll be as efficient, but it's really Kingston getting to the inside the paint. Like, he has the ability to come off that pick and roll, get downhill, and be pretty dynamic finishing around the rim. I just think that's, you know, depending on the type of defense you see, especially if teams are zoning you out or if they're aggressively attacking the pick and roll or double teaming, like, they can take the ball out of Kingston's hands. So I just don't see that as being efficient as with stopping the cold runs from the Cougars offense.
And that's what's interesting is, like, where do they go if that's not falling? He's had some severe cold stretches.
Yes.
And it could be. Like, this is, I'm not talking about, like, oh, they can't get out of the opening weekend, or no. Oh my gosh, they can't get
to the lead. I think they're Sweet 16 at minimum.
I think they get out of the opening weekend. I think they can certainly win the Sweet 16 matchup, but I think it becomes more matchup dependent than in years past. Having said that, like, it's hard to win in the tournament. Their matchups last year, they went to the national championship and they were a possession away effectively from winning the whole damn thing. And they were clearly a top 2-3 team in America. This year they're not that, and they still had that Purdue game. Like, yeah, you're going to run into just a matchup.
They nearly lost to Duke as well,
right? And that's in the Final Four, so kind of like, yeah, whatever. You lose that game, okay? And Duke was, I think, viewed by most as probably the best.
Yeah, one, I think they're also a one seed, just like the Cougs.
So you gotta figure that out, but. They're more matchup dependent this year than last year versus it doesn't really matter who we play. We're going to do what we do and we're going to do it well. We hope to be winning at the end. And that can still be the case this year to a degree. But, like, I'm taking a look at it. They're just more vulnerable this year. And
yeah, I just think they can't run up to a team that can out-defend them. Like you mentioned, they were, I think, fifth. And the defensive efficiency metric you're looking at, like, if they run into another team that's top five, top eight, like, in the defensive side that can expose some of those things we're talking about with the Cougars offense, then I think that's a spot where I would pick them to lose.
And, of course, Lenardi's got them in the Oklahoma City bracket.
Oh, not in the Houston bracket?
No. He's got them in the OKC. He's got them as a two seed, which is, yeah. So they would play Furman, win that, then they would play St. Mary's or St. Louis. Like, I think they win that. That would be their next matchup, and then they would go play the winners of North Carolina, South Florida, Nebraska, Wright State. If that's the case, I love those matchups for them because Nebraska stinks offensively as a three seed. Like, that's a great matchup.
Yeah, Sean and I were actually talking about that yesterday. Like, I know Nebraska's been pretty good this year, but it's one of those things where it's – kind of going back to what we've talked about several times, it's just a feel thing. Like, I can't take Nebraska basketball seriously until they've done it for, you know, like a few years in a row. Like, Sean was looking at their tournament appearances, and they went to a bunch of them, I think, not all consecutive, but in a pretty tight window, like late 80s through the 90s. And then, like, kind of actually like Cougars basketball until Samson got there, where there was like a 20-year stretch where they went one time. There's basically the same thing for Nebraska. Huh. There was like a 20-year stretch where they went to the tournament two times. So I think Nebraska's a team I'll be fading in my brackets just on feel alone. Like, I can't believe until they actually prove it.
Just looking at some of the other three seeds, like Alabama's currently a three seed. They're not in the same region, but if they were to be, just kind of the guys, kind of teams in that quadrant, if you would, they have a great offense. So, like, that could give them problems versus Nebraska, who's a really, really bad offense but good defense. They could beat Nebraska, have problems with a team like Alabama. So it really becomes matchup-driven for them a little bit more this year than last year. And, again, like, they're one of the top teams in the country. They're hopefully going to be there in the end, and it's going to be fun as hell to watch, and it's going to be an amazing time because this is my favorite time of year. We're such prisoner of the moments, but is opening weekend of the NCAA tournament or the NCAA tournament a particular weekend the best sports weekend to you or what?
Yeah, well, I would even actually not even say weekend. To me, it's that first Thursday, Friday. Like when like it's just constantly there's – because of the way they stagger the start times, which I wish – you know, Jeremy's often had an idea or he's brought this up many times, that is, where the NFL schedule should do that, where instead of having, you know, half the games at noon, half the games at 3, and then a Sunday night and a Monday night game, where, like, just stagger them throughout the day. Like, you have a 10 o'clock start, 11 o'clock start, noon start. Like
for the Final Four you're talking about?
But he wants to do that with the NFL. No, but what I love about that Thursday, Friday is because they're staggering those tip times, like I think it's every 20 minutes, maybe it's every 15 minutes.
It's just never a
breath. Like it's like no matter where you turn, what part of the day, for those 2 days, for like 12 hours straight, you have nothing but like the final moments of mostly tight games, although obviously there's always a few blowouts.
The beautiful thing about the NCAA tournament is that if the first weekend stinks, that second weekend is going to be crazy because all the best teams won.
Yeah,
they
sure.
all moved on. It's like if there's no drama sure. initially, then all the best teams have moved on and all the best matchups are about to happen in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. And that weekend is also just as crazy. I could make an argument that that weekend's better than opening weekend simply from the standpoint that the product is that much more better. Like the better teams are playing each other versus the 1 versus 16. Now, the drama could be taken out. Now, if there's drama in the first weekend, it's like crazy. There's many more games.
Then you get Florida Gulf Coast in the Sweet 16. Like, okay, like, well, they're facing a one seed. They're about to get obliterated.
So I used to be Mr. Cinderella. I loved it. Like, let's go. The problem now with NIL, in particular because of NIL, that cream rises to the top so much faster, and there's such a clear delineation between the teams that a Cinderella one run is not only improbable these days, like into the Sweet Six or into the Elite Eight or Final Four, it just probably really ain't going to happen. I say that it's going to happen now, but it's just not that fun to watch. Like the talent is consolidated between like six, seven teams. The best players.
You did it again, Will.
Oh, gee whiz, dude.
Mr. Success.
This is not my fault. This is the way I've always talked.
The talent pool
is just so consolidated amongst the top tier.
I think as college football's shown us, though, I think it's actually spreading out more because, like, in the past.
Not in basketball. Basketball's so different than
football. Like, because, I mean, in theory, like, if more teams. Because before when teams, at least officially, and, you know, not under the table, couldn't pay you, like, the talent would consolidate onto a few rosters because guys wanted to be on the NBA factories, the teams that are playing on Big Monday, getting to the tournament, getting that national spotlight. But now that, you know, you can pay players, I think that actually spreads the talent pool out. We've certainly seen that, I think, in college football where, you know, like the two deep for Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, you know, in years past before NIL and the transfer portal was insane. But now those guys that were second on the chart are going to go to Fresno State or some other, you know, lesser school because they can start, they can get some NIL money. And that I think that has made for more parity in college football. And I think the truth is the same. I mean, now I'm not calling for an 8 seed to win the national title, but I think that does potentially create more chaos in the early rounds of the college basketball tournament just because some of those players that were willing to be a backup are going to go be a starter somewhere else.
We got all ones last year.
Yeah, but that's not the norm.
I know it's not the norm, but I think it's going to be more chalk than not because of NIL in basketball. Like, building a team in football is so much harder. It's 22 guys. It's three phases of the game. Like, there's a lot of issues that go into it. The coaching is a big deal. The injuries are a big deal. In basketball, you know, you have 2-3 guys, you're going to make a run. In football, you have 2-3 guys, you're not going to make a run. Like, there's a lot more money to go around. You can spread that out. Like you said, you mentioned the depth. You know what? Let's have this debate because I think we're on opposite sides of this a little bit, so this could be entertaining. What do y'all think? 713-780-3776. Are we liking to see more or less Cinderella runs in the tournament this year because of NIL or for whatever reason? Let us know. 713-780-3776, HRNP, listener hotline. Will Kunkel filling in for Joe and Jeremy today. We'll be back in like 2 minutes. All right, we'll be right back. Peace.
Guess who?
ESPN 97.5, brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.